And now, it's the Wide Shut Webcast.
Let's talk about satanic ritual abuse, because people are losing their minds over these Hampstead videos where it's claimed babies are being cooked in secret rooms in fast food restaurants and dead baby skulls are being danced around in churches and all of these absurd stories. And that's not to say these children haven't been harmed. The very fact that they were placed into care shows that the authorities accept that they are victims and the whole situation has harmed them. But not harm them because of a widespread satanic network making shoes out of human skin, but harmed them because of the delusions of their mother and her partner who filmed the videos, who already have files for neglect of children on record. The mother's partner has a history of physical violence against his own children and the children in the videos. He, quote, used to give them licks, which is a term for punching. He also used to hit them with metal spoons and was reported by a third party for being aggressive towards them in public. And he's the one filming the videos. That's the inconvenient truth of all the people losing their minds and calling it a cover-up and the satanic elite. He already has a file for being an abuser. So isn't the most logical explanation that the content of the videos are an outgrowth of the abuse and delusions already within their home environment? Not that they're truthful accounts of something that happened. So in light of all the hysteria online, I wanted to discuss the concept of satanic ritual abuse. This idea that widespread networks of satanic cults are abusing children and murdering babies and drinking blood and worshipping the devil, because that's what satanic cults do, because it's a very well documented phenomenon. However, it's not a concept that has been proven in the literal sense. If you actually pore over the cases and look at the studies, not one network of Satanists in this context has ever been uncovered. However, the idea that it's secretly happening in communities across the world has been around really since the 1980s, and it's what sociologists would call a moral panic. It's called the satanic panic. It's a mode of behaviour that you can trace back to things like the Salem witch trials, where society projects its fears and paranoia, the dark side of itself, the worst, most incomprehensible things you can think of in your nightmares, and they project it into reality. But for the most part, that's all it is. It's a projection, not reality. And in the modern context, this satanic panic was really an outgrowth of the 60s counterculture and all the Christian paranoia that went along with that, the Christian opposition to the counterculture and changes in society. Drugs, hippies, real cults and communes, heavy metal music, Charles Manson. As the years went on, goths, teenagers that listened to heavy metal and wore black, they must be worshipping the devil because Judas Priest sings about it. It was a crossroads, a cultural crossroads in the United States, where people began to move away from that puritanical Christian way of living, those ideals. And the friction that that caused created this great anxiety amongst the fundamentalists. So with an article I did on wideshut.co.uk, where you can find all of my articles and videos and everything, I honed in especially on the concept of satanic ritual abuse, because that was a central part of the panic. In fact, thousands of allegations were made in this context of satanic networks and ritual sacrifices and stuff, and none of it ever turned out to be true. It was just a rebirth of the same kind of societal paranoia that you saw during the witch hunts. but the very specific crop of themes which you can go through like a checklist with the Hampstead case, satanic cult, blood drinking, abuse, sacrifice of children, rituals. This can all be pinpointed in the modern context to the late 70s, throughout the 80s, and it came to Britain a little bit later, the late 80s into the early 90s. And the whole entire panic, all of the themes that are still being bandied around today, mostly online, were actually first broached to the public through works of fiction. There weren't any allegations of this kind before a series of what are called survivor stories. Oh, I was in a satanic cult. Buy my book. Let me speak at your church. Oh, Oprah Winfrey wants to talk to me. And it's actually a very clear example of predictive programming. Popular fiction and the media working hand in hand created the panic, and then all the allegations began to pour in. Now, if you prefer to read this and follow the source material and look at it deeply, you can go to wideshut.co.uk and just read the article. It's titled Satanic Ritual Abuse: Seven Fictions That Created a Mythology. And this is essentially just a podcast version of that article. And some of the videos that I've linked to in the article, I'm going to splice into this podcast. And if you're watching on YouTube, you'll also be able to see some visuals along with it as well.
Well, I was, in this Satanism and drugs and all that stuff in the 60s and pretty much into the hippie culture and stuff and going to college. You know, everybody went to college to avoid the draft. And I was in college and just pursuing my career as an occultist. I'd been studying the occult since I was about 13. I was doing a lot of dope and drinking a lot of booze.
Mike Warnecke's book, The Satan Cellar, 1973, did not directly reference satanic ritual abuse in regard to children, but it did establish some of the satanic themes and rites, and is a starting point for the panic that would follow due to how it was widely disseminated along the Bible Belt of America. He continued ideas popularized by the likes of Rosemary's Baby, the novel and film that reached wide appeal a few years prior, as well as the emerging ritualism of Levian Satanism, and boldly declared that he had spent years in a real satanic cult. He claimed to have been a high priest, presiding over thousands of Satanists in three different cities. He describes the kidnapping, brainwashing, and ritual rape of a young woman, as well as the summoning of demons through spells and blood-drinking rituals. But after having a change of heart, instead of surrendering himself to the cops for his crimes and handing over evidence to track down the cult and put a stop to them, he did what any morally sound and good-natured person would do. He found God and became a preacher, selling his story as he went. He promoted his book as a true life account rather than a novel, and declared that his satanic network really did worship the devil and commit crime and abuse, unlike Anton LaVey's harmless but antagonistic brand of atheism. This gave the churches the perfect fodder to confirm their congregation's fears. Satan was real, and the degradation of society was down to him. Remember, this was the 60s-70s era when the younger generations were first beginning to reject their puritanical parents and religion, where heavy metal music was on the rise, and people were not only experimenting with drugs, but also different belief systems, several which did give rise to damaging cults. In fact, Warnecke claimed to have attended rituals with Charles Manson, the evil archetype of the era. The fundamentalists had a collective anxiety because they didn't understand how the world was changing and what their children were doing. And men like Warnecke gave them a specific target to unleash their negative energy towards, the satanic cults. He travelled the networks of churches across the country, released his presentations on tape and album, appeared on television, and, as the title of the book suggests, sold Satan to the masses. Only it was all bullshit. Many people knew that from the beginning, but it took a popular Christian publication, Cornerstone Magazine, to expose his timeline of events and track down the people who he was really hanging out with during his so-called 8-year satanic crash course. Ultimately, Mike Warnke recanted a lot of his claims and decided to drop the act and become a Christian comedian. If only he read some of the Satan Sellers pages on stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome God's one and only voice of comedy, Mike Warnke.
Why do people drive on parkways and park on driveways? What is daylight savings time? And if we're saving so much of it, who's got it all? How do you know when yogurt's gone bad? How do you get Teflon to stick to a skillet when nothing sticks to Teflon? How hard would it be to nail Jell-O to a wall? Inquiring minds want to know, you know?
Despite our ability to laugh at this absurd relic of religious paranoia and exploitation, his book did very real damage and is still being felt to this day. He essentially popularized the modern concept of criminal satanic cults ritualistically abusing people, and he sucked up millions in donations for churches in the process. Unfortunately, the worst was yet to come. The satanic ritual abuse concept really took off with Michelle Remembers, a book written in 1980 by Canadian psychotherapist Lawrence Pazder and his patient Michelle Smith. In fact, it was in Michelle Remembers that the term ritual abuse was first coined. The book refers to Pazder's so-called therapy sessions with depressive Michelle that began in 1973. The same year The Satan Cellar was published, and during the excitement surrounding the Exorcist movie. After a rather routine couple of years, the book claims Michelle suddenly went into a possessed-like trance during one of these sessions and began to regress to the state of a 5-year-old girl. Over the next 600 hours of sessions, Pazder claimed he used hypnosis techniques to recover alleged memories of ritual abuse that occurred in the 50s at the hands of Michelle's mother, Virginia, and a satanic cult. The story claims that Smith was sexually abused, forced to drink blood at Satan's altar, and witnessed the ritual murder of babies. It sounds absurd, but these themes became the backbone of thousands of allegations that would emerge in the 80s, none of which ever had any merit beyond certain isolated cases of child abuse. Many of these cases emerged from Pazder's own hypnosis techniques, as a whole community of therapists began to claim the ability to recover hidden memories of child abuse that patients had buried because of trauma. However, today, modern psychology rejects these methods and warns that it's impossible to distinguish between a real and a false memory without corroborative evidence, and that therapists may well be implanting the memories into their patients through suggestion or encouragement during therapy. British guidelines advise psychotherapists that so-called repressed memories can be metaphorical or outright fantasies, and without corroborative evidence should be interpreted as such. The ending of Michelle Remembers claims 5-year-old Michelle was subjected to an 81-day-long ritual, which culminated in the devil himself being summoned, only for Jesus, the Virgin Mary, and Archangel Michael to come down and save the day, conveniently removing all the scarring and physical signs of abuse from Michelle's body. Despite these impossible allegations, the Christian community and most of the mainstream media welcomed the book at face value, and Pazder was christened the go-to expert when criminal cases would soon emerge after the book's publication. One of those cases was the McMartin daycare scandal that erupted in 1983 after mother Judy Johnson claimed to believe her son had been molested by her estranged husband and teacher Ray Buckey. This quickly escalated into claims of bestiality, children being attacked with drills and supernatural occurrences like levitation.
Virginia McMartin, her daughter, two grandchildren, and three other teachers were ultimately indicted on more than 300 counts of molestation.
Two South Bay preschools.
It wasn't long before accusations of abuse were being reported at seven other daycare centers in L.A. County alone.
Investigators were at the Hickory Preschool in Torrance earlier today.
And then fear spread across the country, eventually targeting scores of daycare centers. But the story that initially fed the panic was not all it seemed. In the summer of 1983, a 39-year-old mother called the Manhattan Beach Police Department and accused McMartin teacher Raymond Buckey of molesting her two-and-a-half-year-old son.
In the DA's office, all kinds of doubts developed, particularly about the fact that the mother of the first complaining child was psychotic, but they just kept on going. It was like the Titanic. It was like a roller coaster or a ship that just was out of control and couldn't stop.
The police released Buckey for lack of evidence. But then they sent out this letter to some 200 families, instructing them to question their children about sodomy, oral sex, and fondling.
This obviously caused a great panic, and many more allegations began to emerge. It was determined that hundreds of children should all be interviewed, and Pasda was brought on board as an expert consultant because of his work with Michelle. This ignoring the fact that no formal investigation or material evidence has ever been presented for the content of Michelle Remembers. The hysteria grew exponentially. Flying witches, blood drinking, secret orgies at a car wash, and other seemingly public places were all claimed. Then there were the secret underground tunnels and rape in a spaceship. The children were allegedly flushed down special toilets that ejected them into underground satanic temples before sucking them back up to be cleaned before parents arrived for home time. This hodgepodge of delusional paranoia led to the most expensive series of criminal trials in US history at that time. They lasted for 6 years, and there were a total of 321 counts of child abuse charged, based almost entirely on the children's varied, contradictory, and impossible testimony. Ultimately, no convictions ever materialized, but all of those accused spent some time within the system. Ray Buckey lost 5 years of his life before being acquitted in 1990. Since then, the case has been vigorously studied by all manner of experts and academics, and it is now accepted that the overall body of the children's allegations were created by the coercion of the interviewers who went against California guidelines at the time.
I can't say that I ever saw a videotape where kids said this happened to me. Never of their own account, spontaneously.
The interviews are upsetting to read because essentially what happened is the therapist unintentionally coerced the children into fabricating stories of abuse. You have interviews that will start off with a therapist asking a child whether they had ever played any naked games at McMartin. This was a huge topic, was naked games. And the children initially say no. The therapist, though, didn't accept those answers. So then they repeat the question. And then they repeat it again. Eventually, the children realize that their interview is never going to be allowed to end until they start giving the interviewer the kind of answer that she wants to hear.
Never did anyone do anything to me, and I never saw them doing anything. I said a lot of things that didn't happen. I lied, revealed alleged victim Kyle Zappolo in 2005. Any time I would give them an answer that they didn't like, they would ask again and encourage me to give them the answer they were looking for. I felt uncomfortable and a little ashamed that I was being dishonest, but at the same time, being the type of person I was, whatever my parents wanted me to do, I would do. Several conflicts of interest were also observed, including the history of mental illness from the original mother, the prosecution using an inmate with a history of perjury and giving him immunity from perjury if he testified against Ray Bookie, and dubious characters like Pazda hanging on and influencing the case. Interestingly, one of the key local reporters who showed a bias towards the allegations ended up in a relationship with one of the children's key interviewers. And David Rosenzweig, the editor of the Los Angeles Times at the time, became engaged to marry Lael Rubin, the prosecutor in the case. It might also be worth noting that Lawrence Pazda and his so-called patient Michelle Smith both divorced their previous partners and married before Michelle Remembers was published.
My next guest was used also in worshipping the devil, participated in human sacrifice rituals and cannibalism. She says her family has been involved in rituals for generations. She is currently in extensive therapy, suffers from multiple personality disorder, meaning she's blocked out many of the terrifying and painful memories of her childhood.
During the midst of McMartin and other similar trials, a woman using the name Lauren Stratford came along to add to the growing hysteria of satanic ritual abuse. She claimed to be a survivor of such abuse and alleged she had a lesbian relationship with the preschool's matriarch, Virginia McMartin. In 1988, Stratford and her evangelical preacher friend, Joanna Mickelson, published the book Satan's Underground, The Extraordinary Story of One Woman's Escape. This led to Stratford appearing on chat shows like Oprah to share her experience of being raised in a satanic cult and witnessing and partaking in the ritualistic sexual abuse and murder of children. Her major contribution to the mythology was the concept of infanticide, or the mass ritualistic murder of babies. She claimed to be a baby breeder, the person tasked with birthing and acquiring the infants for the sacrifices to Satan. Off the back of these claims, she also associated herself with the infamous Kern County child abuse cases, which emerged not long after McMartin. In total, 36 people were convicted based only on flimsy testimony, and most of these people spent years in jail before having their convictions overturned. Many of the alleged victims later admitted there was no truth to their stories, and said they were encouraged by various adults in their families and the system to make things up. It has since emerged that local Kern County social workers had attended a training seminar where the book Michelle Remembers was used as training material. As for Stratford, despite trying her best to latch on to these cases, even the investigators sent her packing, but her book did get major publicity. Just like Warnke, after she managed to escape the satanic cult, she decided selling her story was more important than handing herself in with evidence to catch the other so-called culprits. No missing babies or remains of babies have ever been discovered in relation to her claims, and later investigations revealed that none of her dates even matched up. Nobody who ever knew her by her real name, Laurel Rose Wilson, had ever known her to be pregnant or part of a cult. She did, however, have a history of mental illness, and once her publisher pulled her book for being a hoax, she changed her name to Laura Grabowski and began claiming to be a Holocaust survivor. Her preacher friend Mickelson is still active on Facebook, sharing stories about Israel and Palestine and stylizing herself as an expert on the occult. As for Kern County, a grassroots movement grew in support of those wrongly convicted, and a documentary called Witch Hunt charts their story and leaves a lot of the blame at the doorstep of District Attorney Ed Jagels.
This seems like a bad nightmare. Seems like I ought to wake up tomorrow and it'd be over with, but it's not. I just want everything to get back to normal.
All evidence was based on the victim's testimony, which reinforces prosecutors' statements that a child's testimony can convict.
Well, they said that if I don't say that something happened, that this terrible man who's done this to all these people is going to be doing it to more kids.
I told them what they wanted me to tell them, you know.
They promised me that nobody would get in trouble or go to prison.
They're leading these kids into saying what they're saying.
They felt obligated to say what it was that law enforcement and the social workers made very clear to them they wanted them to say. And nothing ever happened to them.
Is the apparent practice of Satanism. That's worship of the devil. Now, police have been
the news media played an important role in getting the fraudulent survivor stories out to the wider public. In 1985, ABC News show 2020 did an investigative piece on the devil worshippers. Cutting through the imagery, creepy music and claims of known liars, it only really focused on a few isolated cases of church vandalism, violent criminality and teenage rebellion. Nonetheless, the slick production and faux concern from the hosts certainly fanned the flames of the panic. One YouTube user comments, "I remember my mum took my metal albums away after watching this." Talking heads on the programme included none other than our old pals Lawrence Pazda and Mike Warnke.
One of their primary aims is to destroy the belief system within a child, to make a child turn against what they believe in terms of who they are, of who God is, and to desecrate all manner of flesh, all manner of church institution, all manner of sign and symbol that a child could in any way be attached to.
But back in the 60s, he was one of Satanism's high priests.
The things that you would see in a satanic altar.
He showed us what a satanic temple might resemble and typical implements used to worship the devil.
The bones usually are used in a ceremony that calls for telling the future with the bones or a part of the deceased person.
He also explained what attracted him to Satanism.
I was basically drawn into it when I was young, just wanting to be somebody special. I just wanted to be different than everybody and have something that was special that everybody, you know, looked up to.
Here at the Neighborhood Videotape Store, take a look at the number of movies that involve Satanism. Most were popular films in their day, but even today, if one is inclined to believe in Satanism, it's a way to actually see the devil and perhaps be inspired.
In The Exorcist, it is the tremendous power of the devil himself controlling a little girl's body against the will of a priest. It makes the movie still one of the most popular examples of evil versus good.
By this sign of the of our Lord Jesus Christ, who lives and reigns with the Father.
It wasn't that a demon jumped out of the TV and grabbed me by the face and dragged me down the road and forced me to join the Church of Satan. It was just that there were certain things in this program that piqued my interest, and then I decided to study more on my own. And if the devil has PR, then it is, you know, cinema.
Modern Satanism was shockingly dramatized on the screen in the mid-60s with the release of Rosemary's Baby.
What have you done to it? What have you done to its eyes?
He has his father's eyes.
It's a movie that's been described as the best advertisement that devil worship has ever had.
What are you talking about, guys? Eyes are normal. What have you done to him, you maniac?
Satan is his father, not Guy. He came up from hell and begat a son of mortal woman.
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Satan is his father, and his name is Adrian. He shall overthrow the mighty in their temples. He shall redeem the despised and wreak vengeance.
The zeal of these fictional devil worshippers is strikingly similar to that of real-life Satanists.
Perhaps a simpler explanation is that real-life Satanists like Mike Warnke were simply crafting stories based on more popular stories from the cinema. Since Warnke's book was clearly a work of fiction, and most of the claims on this 2020 broadcast are false or sensationalized, neither Warnke or ABC News are separate from the fiction they claim was impacting society. It would seem, rather than fiction leading to a widespread occurrence of real Satanism at the time, both forms of fiction, both traditional at the cinema and hoax stories presented as real by the likes of 2020, actually led to a paranoia that didn't have any basis in reality. The real widespread network of true believers did real damage in the form of hysteria and witch hunts, but actual Satanism and ritual abuse itself was nowhere to be found. The most distasteful part of this program sees the host Charles Gibson talking to two young boys and getting them to reenact their tale of ritualistically stabbing a baby with a butter knife and a doll. Despite police admitting that there was no evidence that this really happened, nobody seemed to have any problem with exploiting the poor children while endorsing a can of Crush soda in the process.
Was there any reference to the devil?
No.
Yes.
And this case now under police investigation involving young boys describing murder.
Tell me what you were asked to do.
I was asked to stab him.
To stab him. And this was in front of the other people who were there? Were you given a knife?
Yes.
And were you told what would happen to you if you didn't?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what they said?
This will happen to you.
So you either stab him or you'll be stabbed was about what it came down to. Do you remember his eyes?
With their guardian's consent, the boys used a doll to illustrate what they did.
You say you were given the knife, and then what did you do?
Like this.
Did you push the knife all the way in deep, or did you just touch the skin?
All the way in deep.
In deep. Were you in the room where this was going on? Did you see what happened to the child that was stuck with the knife?
Yeah.
It was programs like this and Geraldo Rivera's 1988 special that gave the panic credibility on a national stage. For his show, the mustachioed hack reporter stole the name of Lauren Stratford's book and decided to expose Satan's underground. Cut together with satanic imagery, interviews with experts, and a live studio audience, Geraldo investigated everything from the McMartin case to heavy metal music. He even had Ozzy Osbourne live via satellite to answer for his satanic lyrics. Stratford herself also appeared on the show and retold her fraudulent story of being a breeder of babies to be sacrificed to Satan.
It is most common for the heart to be taken from the child and offered to Satan.
These women say they speak from personal experience. They claim to be breeders, forced by covens to bear children, both as a way for the cults to get new members and to find fresh victims for ritual murder.
Believable. But Zena LaVey, are these women lying?
You have to understand that everything, every single thing you've given as examples of Satanism here are completely from a Christian standpoint. That everything you've put forth as being considered satanic is not considered satanic by my standard or my definition of Satanism.
Are these women lying?
Well, have the bodies been found? Where are they?
Respected law enforcement professional, recently or retired now from the FBI, former regional director of Los Angeles. Do you, sir, believe that these dreadful allegations of babies being sacrificed are true?
I absolutely believe it, without any doubt. Based on the information that's been given to me across the country by numerous survivors and by confidential sources and informants.
Then why don't you name these people and arrest them? Never a name, never an arrest. These women come out of a group, and they insist that they know the people in the group, and yet they do not identify these large, mysterious cults. Name them and arrest them and get them off the street.
Does he not make a valid point?
He makes a valid point. The problem with that is...
Former FBI Chief Ted Gunderson, who passed away in 2011, became a prominent talking head in the wider conspiracy community, buddying up to the likes of Alex Jones and lending his air of authority to a number of theories beyond satanic ritual abuse. It's concerning that somebody so high up in the chain during the declassified COINTELPRO era would be accepted at face value in the mainstream and alternative media. It wasn't just the United States where the satanic panic took hold. By the 90s, it had reached the UK with a similar set of cases and the same checklist of themes. We had our own psychotherapists, like Dr. Valerie Sinison, making claims of widespread satanic ritual abuse. This again was based solely on what she'd encouraged from her mentally unstable patients, never actually seeking any corroborative evidence. Our social workers were also influenced by self-styled experts at conferences and training seminars, which sometimes hosted guests from the US. The hysteria really picked up, though, when the NSPCC charity shared a list known as the Satanic Indicators. Intended for social workers, it outlines so-called signs that a child may be a victim of satanic ritual abuse, despite the concept having never even been proven. Armed with their newfound knowledge about the devil, and encouraged by Christian elements within the social services and wider community, children began to be snatched by the state in a series of paranoid and baseless cases. One of the most high-profile of these was the 1990 case in Rochdale, when a total of 12 children were wrongly removed from 5 families, several in dawn raids by police. Allegations ranged from the sacrifice of human babies and robed devil worship to locking children in cages and caves. None of the claims were ever proven, and all of the children were eventually returned to their families after a court case. In the worst instance, families were not reunited for 10 years. Many of the alleged victims later spoke out in a documentary about the very real abuse they suffered when being forced to undergo medical examinations at the behest of those who had snatched them.
We were normal, everyday people in the same boat as everybody else on the Langley estate, and something traumatic happened to us all, and it just made a mess of our lives, and we have to live with it.
No, I was missed years.
Never get that back, will we?
No. Never forgiven for this. I don't think any of us could. Never. Because it just shouldn't have happened.
And then a social worker come back and she said, go on to Beauval Hospital. So I said, what for? She said, do you want to examine them? You want to see if they've been sexually abused? I said, well, when is all this going to be cleared up? She said, well, after we've had the examination, it should be fine. And they got examined. And the hardest one was Julia.
And they asked me to lie on the table. So I lay on the table. And then I looked at Mum. And she looked at me with a sad face, like she knew what they were going to do. And she said to me, don't worry, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere.
Videotapes of the children's interviews were eventually released to the media and showed how the social workers once again coerced and encouraged the stories. One social worker involved in the Rochdale case, Liz McLean, just a few months later would become the central figure in another case in the Scottish Orkney Islands. Once again, children were snatched in police raids and their parents accused of satanic ritual abuse. Evidence gathered and recorded as 3 masks, 2 hoods and 1 black cloak actually turned out to be 3 nativity masks, 2 academic hoods that you would wear when graduating university, and 1 priest's robe. A handmade child's model plane was recorded as a wooden cross, and a copy of Blackadder on videotape was also taken as evidence.
He had the interviews that were recorded, he'd listened to them all, he'd reached a view that this was total rubbish, that the children were coached, that there was no foundation, and that the children, in his own words, were safer at home. And at that point, we decided to go to Paul Lee at the social work department and demand our children back.
No, you're not running away from this one.
Oh, no, madam.
Oh, no, madam.
You have made innocent children and families suffer.
What are you going to do about it?
The children were frightened when they were taken. If you are a little bit frightened, madam, it won't nearly be enough.
The children themselves denied they had been abused. Recalling the whole saga later as an adult, one victim described how social worker Liz McLean tried to force her to go along with it. I was terrified of her. She was very intimidating, very controlling. I was always small when I was a child, but she would lean over me. She got very angry. She would want me to agree with what she was saying. They were mentioning about private parts, things like that. Asking me, did one of the grown-ups touch you and touch your brothers and sisters in your private parts? They would want me to agree with it. And when Liz McLean couldn't get me to agree with it, she would ask me to draw a picture. So I drew a picture of my pony. That wasn't right. Then I drew a picture of us playing football. That wasn't right. Eventually, she pulled this piece of paper out that had a circle on it and she said, copy that. So I drew a circle, and she said, draw little stick men around it. And that's what I did. And she said, you've been very good. And that was the meetings. It seems even where the satanic indicators didn't fit, social workers made them fit. In 1990, feminist activist and journalist Beatrix Campbell produced an episode of Channel 4's investigative series Dispatches. She had become a leading media figure in the UK side of the satanic ritual abuse hysteria. She had previously sided with social workers in the Orkney case. Her programme, Listen to the Children, revisited a high-profile case from 1987 in Broxtowe, Nottinghamshire, where several children were placed into care. After an initial investigation, evidence was presented and a jury convicted 9 adults of being involved in an incest ring spanning several generations within one extended family. The nature of such a case means that not all of the facts will have come to light, but the local authority was happy that the children were safe and the majority of those leading the abuse were convicted.
After the children were taken into care, something strange happened. Their foster parents had been asked by the social workers to keep diaries of any further disclosures the children might make. Neither the foster parents nor the social workers would take part in this film, but they did speak once. They described the children's disclosures shortly after the Broxtowe case was over.
She told us about groups of people, dancing round in witches' costumes, abusing her. There was, at that time, she said it was a doll on the floor in the middle of this ring that they had to jump on it. And just things like that. And in a church and drinking blood and just all together. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
At the behest of the foster parents and social workers, police opened up a second investigation to get to the bottom of the new satanic allegations. Teams returned to the houses of the abusers and tore them apart in search of any hidden evidence, as well as checking the gardens for graves or sacrifice remains. Nothing was found. They then searched the wider Nottingham area, including alleged locations of abuse, such as Wallerton Hall, which is an Elizabethan country house and park owned by the council and open to the public. Again, nothing was found. There were also no tunnels found between Wallerton Hall and other nearby properties as was alleged. And while one tunnel was found in a local cemetery, it was known to the public and was simply an old route where funeral processions would follow into the church grounds. The investigation concluded that the amateur interviewing of the children by the foster carers and their encouragement by social workers obsessed with satanic ritual abuse might put the original case in jeopardy should defense attorneys argue that investigators were beginning to entertain absurdities. If they could prove that they were false, then maybe the original allegations were false too. Police once again closed the case, which caused a rift between the two parties. By this point, the satanic indicators and the wider US-centric hysteria had been spread among the social workers and foster parents, and satanic experts were brought on board to fan the flames of the panic. Now, even more allegations were being made. In the end, it was decided that an independent inquiry involving police and social workers who had yet to be involved in the case be brought in to come to an independent conclusion. By 1990, their findings were released in the Joint Inquiry or JET report and determined that there is no evidence of satanic ritual abuse in the Brockstow case or its aftermath, and the social workers and foster parents were influenced by the unsubstantiated satanic indicators. Quote, parts of the social services department appear to have developed over the last 2 years a belief system in ritualistic satanic abuse, which is unwittingly resulting in children being encouraged to believe in and allege such bizarre abuse. This could lead eventually to grave injustice, and if unchecked, it has the ingredients of a modern witch hunt. This, however, didn't stop Beatrix Campbell peddling her Dispatches documentary. It sought to restate these satanic allegations and framed itself as giving the children a voice. It didn't take on board any of the JET findings and even retraced old allegations that had already been investigated by police. In one sensational scene, Campbell treks down the previous graveyard tunnel with a flashlight. It certainly gives the presence of something creepy, but the tunnel was not secret and had already been investigated. It was a known feature of the grounds that the public were well aware of. Its presence alone is hardly evidence of a satanic cult. On the contrary, it's part of a Christian church's grounds. Campbell then breaks in, or was let in by the caretaker, to the cemetery's lodge. She rummages around in a drawer, finds some junk, and then a dildo, which she puts back in disgust. Quite ironic from a lesbian feminist activist. The insinuation, of course, is that this was some kind of hub for the abuse, but then one has to ask, why would the culprits leave any evidence behind in this lodge, which was so easily accessible? And if the owners of the property were in on the action, why would they let a film crew inside to incriminate them? It has since been claimed that this was simply where the caretaker dumped all the junk that he'd been cleaning out from the grounds every so often. Similar to the conflicts of interest with the media that was seen in the McMartin scandal, social worker Judith Dawson, who was featured in the Dispatches episode, left her husband and began a lesbian relationship with Campbell. The two would continue to peddle the satanic ritual abuse mythology, and Judith managed to worm her way into other cases because she dropped her husband's name. Campbell, who has since received an OBE from the Queen, is now a prominent member of the Green Party. She seems to keep this embarrassing time of her life at arm's length, and the entry about it from her Wikipedia page has curiously been scrubbed, but you can check it out in the talk section. Those pushing the Hampstead abuse allegations have brought her name back into the fold as somebody who supports the cause, though she hasn't actually discussed the case in any way. Although Channel 4 carelessly commissioned Campbell's Dispatches piece, they did somewhat redeem themselves in a fascinating episode of After Dark. For those unfamiliar, the series was very much a pre-podcast era discussion show that didn't confine itself to time constraints or anything that you would usually expect on a TV broadcast. It would simply run for hours on end and feature a range of guests conversing on a sofa. This particular episode sees anthropologist Dr. Cheryl Mulhern and sociologist Dr. Bill Thompson arguing with the likes of Beatrix Campbell and Nottingham Social Services Director Andy Kroll, who was a fundamentalist Christian and admitted to going on training seminars. After this broadcast in 1991, he was forced to step down from his position.
But what I think is happening that compounds the difficulty is that it seems that we have groups of children in many cities now in Britain who are describing a number of different practices which come together around certain families, or in the case of some of these certain groups of children, right? Now, what may be happening is that there are groups who are into something that we now know as satanic cults, right? And that what they're interested in, it would seem, is subjecting children to rituals that invert Christian belief, that are about domination and humiliation, and that sexual exploitation is extremely important in those rituals. And there may also be other systems involved, which may be child pornography, drugs. The effect of drugs, of course, might be to bewilder the children, to make the children believe that certain things are happening, which may or may not happen. We don't know. The point is, the children are trying to describe a number of systems which are about sexual oppression of one kind or another. And in the Nottingham case, I think the workers there, the specialist team there, feel that they don't quite know what happened, because their only database is these heroic children. But that a number of systems may have been in operation there, which may have involved criminal acts involving drugs or child pornography, and groups which may or not be connected to any of that, which were involved in some kind of satanic belief.
But it is not only the fact that it is a testimony of children which makes it difficult.
But these were corroborated by adults,
corroborated
by the way.
But certainly in the Rochdale case now, we know that the judge referred to vastly inappropriate videos that the children might be watching. And I think, Cheryl, this is where you have to come in, because Cheryl's... What do you define as ritual abuse?
Well, this is one of the biggest problems, because this is... I got into this because I work with psychiatrists in the United States, and I've been working with them for 8 years now. And the satanic ritual abuse scare started in Chicago, where I was working with a group of psychiatrists around the multiple personality diagnosis. And for the past 8 years...
I mean, it's almost like a boring student thing, isn't it? Define your terms. But I noticed a lot of your work that I've read, MPD, multiple personality disorder. Since that's going to be quite central to what you're going to be telling us about, you better just...
That might get us, unfortunately, off the subject, which is relevant here. So I'll describe it briefly. This is a disorder which has a long history in psychiatry. It was prevalent 100 years ago, particularly in France. It has to do with a way of defending oneself against trauma. According to the theory of multiple personality diagnosis or multiple personality disorder, a person who is overwhelmed by trauma dissociates the content of what's happened to them into another part of their consciousness. And this other part, over time, with repeated trauma, becomes another personality. Now, it's very important to underline that this can only occur in a highly hypnotizable individual.
Okay.
So we're talking about a small population of people who have a capacity to dissociate to begin with.
Okay.
All right. Now, this just happens to be the context in which this subject came up.
This scare, as you call it.
This scare, yes. It is a scare not only for the general population, but it was a scare for clinicians. I got into this because I worked with real cults for a long time. At the time, I was working with psychiatrists on the problems of dissociation and whether or not this diagnosis was valid, whether it was not valid, what did it mean legally, what does it mean in psychotherapy. And they turned to me and said, we have a problem. We have too many patients that we know are highly hypnotizable. Something's happening here that we can't corroborate, and now it's getting out of hand. This has been the biggest problem with the ritual abuse question, is that up to today, I have never, ever been able to see those terms defined. Every time you find a definition, a scientific or a proper definition of ritual abuse, I've always had to put the satanic now in parentheses because we got off of that very fast and went off to ritual abuse. However, when you see it talked about, it always comes out, we really mean satanic, but we're going to call it ritual abuse to sort of get off of that jag that we were on for a while. We got off of it for a reason. I'll try and get back to that if I can stay awake long enough. We have definitions which don't reflect what people are talking about when they talk about satanic ritual abuse. You get definitions about people who are abusing children for their belief system, or you have it there against God, country, and apple pie, or you have a quantity of things which never bring up the real problem that we all know we're talking about in a think tank or in a conference, which is we're talking about a substantial number of patients, whether they be small children or adults, making allegations which cannot be corroborated, and where there has been substantial investigation to corroborate them. Wait a second. When you say they have been, I think it's very important not to take one case and then start generalizing to all the other cases.
No, it's a case that's the only case that has actually passed before the eyes of five judges who've affirmed the witnesses, the children. The children have been corroborated by adults, and the work of foster carers and social workers has been congratulated. So, I mean, it's a useful case to look at.
Well,
it was the biggest child abuse case in Britain, for God's sake.
Maybe, but maybe not. You see, we're dealing with an accusation about satanic, ritualed child sexual abuse. Here in Nottingham, Beatrix, you've done some work on it, you have allegations, and you can put those allegations, further disclosures, against the fact that we have some people who have been locked away for sexual abuse. Now, what we don't actually have, I think is what Cheryl's talking about, is the paraphernalia that we might expect.
It was never investigated properly. You're not going to get, you don't get the evidence, the kind
catch,
of evidence you're
catch 22. Well, so what we can do is we can stop and say what we've got, and what we can say is, well, we may have a really good case here.
Cheryl
said
no corroboration.
And
in
we're
this
talking
case,
about,
there was corroboration.
We're talking about thousands of accusations across Europe and America. And I think what Cheryl was saying when she was talking about corroboration was talking about if it's specifically satanic as well as ritual, whatever this means, and we still haven't got a definite definition yet, then we would expect more corroboration.
Well, well, see, but that may not matter to me. What matters to me is what has happened to damage, frighten or upset children.
Right.
How has it happened? Do we know who has done it? Mm. Now, the cause of it is not, in the widest sense, that important to me, except in terms of why people behave in that way. Mm-hmm. Can we understand what's going on? Now, I'm not interested in whether it's Satanism, whether it's paraphernalia to frighten children, mm-hmm. whether it's a way a group of people are behaving, which has nothing to do with the belief system, but how they want to bully and abuse other people, whether it's part of a pornographic film.
Sure, but let Cheryl finish, because Cheryl is doubting your whole point.
Well, I'm responding to what you're saying.
What I'm trying to say, we keep forgetting something that happened in England that has happened internationally. This subject just didn't pop out of the mouths of children. We happen to have had, or you happen to have had in this country, a series of training seminars. I spent 4 years investigating these training seminars in the United States. This is not just because the kids started talking about witches and sacrifice.
Yes, it is.
This,
oh,
right. Hold it, it hold is. It.
In, very convenient.
It, no, wait a second.
This is your alibi.
Yeah.
It's not my alibi.
Well, why do you need to believe that it's not
well,
there?
Well, let Cheryl,
we don't even know what the it is yet, and now you've got me not believing that it's not there. What I'm trying to suggest is that if you're going to look at a case, any case when you're investigating child abuse, the goal is to find out what happened here, mm-hmm. not if it happened here.
That's right.
And one of the biggest problems that you have found, we have found in the United States, this is not a new thing in the United States. It's been here since 1982. We've had a substantial number of allegations and a substantial number of very serious investigations, proper investigations, looking for material evidence. Now, if you can say there's not a proper investigation in Nottingham and there was corroboration, bully, that's just fine. I'm talking about 800 cases where there was, and I'm not talking about individual people, I'm talking about whole daycares, where there was proper investigation. When you're looking at a question of incest, it's very hard to prove incest. What have you got? You've got a child who can barely speak about it, and they're talking about, one adult, maybe two adults. Where are you going to get the material evidence for this sort of thing? But when you're talking about
Lots of people dressed up in robes, carrying knives, chopping up animals. Your material evidence is all over the place. Work with the police a little bit, and you find out that it's very hard to cover up all that much stuff. Now, nobody who ever investigated this is going to say that in some case you could not find some individual or group of individuals who actually did some of the things that you're talking about to some children. It's very hard for me to find a middle ground here. I'm not denying that. What we do find is when we find a case where a group of individuals has done nasty things to children or to other adults, that it has a time frame. If it is a cult, and cults, I have studied cults that, in quotes, go bad. They become violent groups. They have a time frame. What do we find out about them? We can find the evidence because this thing blows apart in a relatively restrained period of time. It's one thing when you're talking about a violent serial killer who's all alone chopping up people. Very hard to find that fellow because he hasn't got anybody with him. But when you start looking at large groups of people involved in a conspiracy, it's very hard to hold a conspiracy together. Sure. It doesn't stick over time. We have numbers of examples of them. The Matamoros case was another example of them. The Jonestown case was an example of them. There's many, many more cases where you have groups of people getting together around a leader, around a belief system, often socialized in physical isolation, in a place where nobody else can get to them. The group becomes very violent, and you have very violent fallout at the end. But what do we notice about these things? We had a case recently in the United States, and this is last year. Well, it was a real renegade from the Mormons. He really had a group of people around him. They were really living on a farm, and they really killed a family, and they buried him in the barn. And what happened? Somebody ratted.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. And what do? We dug up the bodies. We got them all. We put them in jail. These are things that are very real when you get into the investigation of them. And you can even have cases where children have, in fact, been convinced by somebody who is a sexual abuser that they have power over them through magic. We had a case in Tennessee like that, but we had a very good team on it that went in, and what do we find? We found the evidence. It wasn't magical mystery disappearing evidence.
That's exactly what's happening in England, that we are finding some evidence.
Other than David Icke's reptilian satanic ritual abuse theories that mostly took grip online, the satanic panic quietened down by the end of the 90s, when we see the term satanic ritual abuse bandied around by so-called experts today. It is therefore important to understand that the term itself was first coined in a work of fiction, Michelle remembers, and only came into popular use as the satanic panic intensified. No credible agency uses the term today because it essentially has no meaning in the real world and brings along with it a lot of unneeded baggage that clouds criminal investigations. According to a 1996 study in the UK by anthropologist Jean LaFontaine, in the handful of isolated abuse cases that did involve loose satanic themes, the perpetrator's goal was deemed sexual gratification rather than any religious worship or widespread cult behaviour. The preoccupation with Satanism by those surrounding the cases was seen to distract from the actual crimes at hand. To this day, not one satanic ritual abuse network has ever been uncovered. So when a case like Hampstead falls out of nowhere and includes every theme on the satanic panic checklist, we need to be deeply sceptical. Have we miraculously stumbled onto the very first legitimate satanic ritual abuse cult? Or is it just another in a long line of false allegations driven by the mythology that came before it? Believers will argue that the children in the videos are far too articulate to be making things up. However, that assumes they are the sole originators of the stories. We've seen how time and time again, social workers and parents have coerced stories out of children to fit their pre-prepared narratives, and the children have gone along with them out of both fear and the desire to please the authority figure. So while it may be true that children do not know how to verbalise the concept of satanic ritual abuse, as it's not in their frame of knowledge or vocabulary, it is not a sign of truthfulness when they do, rather a sign that adults have introduced the themes and words into their world. Even if such coercion came from a genuine place, as may have happened in the McMartin scandal, Rochdale and Orkney, that doesn't make them truthful allegations. In the Hampstead case, police discovered a history of neglect in the family home dating back to when the mother and father were still together. The mother's new partner was also found to have a history of physical violence against his own children and the children in question. Are the public getting wrapped up in another satanic panic and simply failing to see what's right in front of them? You've been listening to the Wide Shut webcast. I'm your host, Keelan Balderson. If you'd like to explore the source material or check out my other articles, podcasts and videos on a wide range of topics, visit wideshut.co.uk.